Sup, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. Today is July 14th, 2017, and I can't get enough of this interview with this rescue guy from Thailand. You know, the giant rescue that took place this past week. There were 12 kids and their soccer coach got stuck in a cave in Thailand that flooded inadvertently. And while the world came together to try and figure out a way to get these people out of this cave, which ultimately they did, and it turned out to be this great story that made the world feel warm and fuzzy this past week. Elon Musk, it's just getting funny now, folks. It's just getting funny. And look, let me hear it. I'm just going to say this ahead of time. All right, again, as you know, a couple things I want to get off the bat right away. First is there's a two-drink minimum for this podcast. So if this is your first episode, I'll wait here while you kindly pause the stream and then just go mainline like four shots of Don Julio. Now, I realize I did say two-drink minimum. Four is, of course, above the minimum. The two-drink minimum works like this. You ever see Office Space where the woman is required to wear 15 pieces of flair? And she's like, well, I've got my 15 pieces. I don't know what the big deal is. And the manager points to the other guy, the guy Brian on the floor, and he's like covered in all kinds of shit. And he's like, yeah, well, 15 pieces is the minimum, but some people choose to do more than that, and we encourage that. Well, that's how my two-drink minimum works on this podcast. Two drinks is the minimum, but some people do more than that, and we like to encourage that. The next thing I would like to remind you is that this podcast is not investment advice, and please see my lengthy and horribly boring disclaimer that is attached to all the episodes. But basically, just do your research elsewhere. That's all you need to know. You want financial advice? Pick up the phone, call somebody at Craig Hallam or something, and have them send you their equity analysis reports, which are basically two pages of discounted cash flow followed by three pages of disclaimers. Then they'll tell you to go in and buy stocks the day after they report a great earnings report. You got to love the sell side. This is just the best like racket on the street, isn't it? Company comes out, beats earnings. Next day, everybody comes out and upgrades them. Whoa, this was great. You know, this is fantastic. They reported a great number. Yeah, go out and buy the stock. You know, meanwhile, stock has already gapped up 15% pre-market or whatever. Then these reports come out like they're doing some type of forward-looking analysis. You know, they're just looking at the company's report and saying, wow, they beat estimates. This is good. We should buy. Anybody can do that. A monkey smoking a cigarette, banging a set of fucking cymbals together, and occasionally, you know, hitting a typewriter could put that together. If you put a big giant bag of bird seed and you poured it all over a typewriter and you released chickens into a room full of typewriters with bird seed all over it and you just let them peck away at the keys, peck, 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 as they're trying to get their food, they could even come up with this. Doesn't take anything for the sell side to come out and tell you to not buy a stock after they report a shit earnings report or buy a stock after a great earnings report comes out. I'm still waiting for the sell side analysis to come out and say buy this into earnings or sell it before earnings or we think the quarter will miss or we think the quarter won't miss. That happens sometimes, but this whole deal of companies, when I first like actually figured it out, when I first kind of figured out that brokerages come out and will upgrade a bunch of companies after a great report, I'm like, well, what's the point? They've already reported. The stock's already gapped up or it traded up the day prior and, you know, aftermarket trading or whatever. So what's the point? You know, just another typical sell side fucking investment bank, just ridiculous scam, you know, paying $30,000 or $40,000 a month for this equity research that's going to tell you the day after a company reports earnings how they're going to do. Apple came out and sold more iPhones than expected. You know, this is great. Then the next day, Goldman Sachs says Apple's iPhone number was exactly where they thought it would be, beating expectations. Oh, great. Well, I don't really need to pay $40,000 a month to know that. All I need is to just open my eyes and look at the internet or look at the television where it's already going to tell me that stuff. But whatever, you guys keep paying for that research. Good job. How about we talk about the, I can't get over this diver, by the way. So as I was trying to say before I got sidetracked, And that's basically how this podcast goes. Oh, the third thing I want to say is this is not a Tesla-only podcast. Yes, today's podcast is going to be a little bit about Tesla. And yes, Monday, I'm also having a debate about Tesla that hopefully goes well. We'll have to see how it turns out. But I can't get over this rescue worker who came out and made comments about what Elon Musk tried to do. So for those of you who are unfamiliar with the story, here's what happened. As I said earlier, these 12 kids and a soccer coach get stuck in a cave in Thailand. And the way that the cave flooded was in such a manner that it is extremely difficult for people to get to them. Lots of twists, lots of turns. As they say in the Big Lebowski, a lot of ins, a lot of outs, Maude. a lot of details that make it difficult for a rescue to take place. So thousands of people come together and they start to try and engineer a way to get these people out of this cave that's flooded. And they're working on it for days and weeks. And, you know, ultimately everybody was saved here. Just, I believe at the beginning of last week, they took the last few people out. So it was a really cool story. And it was nice that these people, and they got invited to go to the World Cup final after, so everybody happy, right? In the midst of this, CEO Numbnuts from Tesla decides that he is going to solve all of the world's problems, having solved the Tesla profitability problem, which, of course, that would be hyperbole, folks, or gross exaggeration for humorous effect, because that has not happened. Do you need me to explain it further? Should I wink and then nudge you also? Huh? Come on. Anyways, having solved that problem, Mr. Musk decides he is going to start to take on all of the world's problems, including this cave rescue in Thailand. And he kind of comes out of nowhere and starts... What the fuck was that? Oh, I forgot to turn these speakers off, huh? Well, that's what you get for doing an unedited show. Anyways, Professor Frank decides that he is going to solve the Thailand cave problem, and he tweets about it on Twitter. So he starts running his mouth on Twitter and talking about the solution to this problem. I'm going to take a bunch of engineers. I'm going to take a bunch of guys from SpaceX. We're going to put them all together. We're going to create some type of capsule device. It's going to be able to get the kids out of the cave. And he throws himself into the middle of this big public, this big public event that's happening that the whole world is watching. So a couple days after this happens, it's all over the news. Elon Musk is now putting together with his engineers from SpaceX a kid-sized submarine to get the children out of this cave. So Elon Musk is going to save the day. And you can forget about the thousands of people that are already working on the problem, as well as the experts, people that understand the geography of these caves, people that are specialists in probably, you know, diving and scuba and all the things that you need to be specialists and the best of the best at in order to solve this problem. Those guys can all forget about it because Elon Musk is on the case, okay? And in case you haven't learned anything about Elon Musk over the last 10 years... The guy is, he's really like Superman. He can fix any problem. So, at least, that's the way he's been painted in the media. So, Mr. Musk decides that he is going to build a kid-sized submarine, and he starts tweeting out videos of his engineers with this big tin... I don't know what it looks like. It looks like a big tin capsule. It's about 5 feet long. It's made out of some type of metal or alloy. And really, it looks like somebody called it a cave dildo. Actually, I think one day hashtag cave dildo was trending on Twitter at one point. But yeah, it would basically look like a big giant... Yeah, so anyways, they're testing this thing in some pool at a fucking YMCA somewhere, and Musk is putting up video footage of this, and he's saying, I got my guys on it, I've got divers, I've got engineers, I got this, that, and the other thing, whatever. So meanwhile, as the actual rescue operation is unfolding in Thailand, this guy puts this fucking thing onto a plane, and then puts himself onto a plane and flies his ass over to Thailand, and by the time he gets there... Half the kids had already been saved, and then I think it was shortly thereafter that the rest of them had come out. And so everybody is super stoked and the people are safe and the world is happy, et cetera, et cetera. And instead of just congratulating everybody and moving on with it and Elon Musk, you know, calling it a day, you know, he put on Twitter, I'm going to leave the kid-sized submarine here so that, you know, they might be able to use it in the future if this happens again or whatever. Instead of just doing that and then going back to Tesla and figuring out the major world problem that has eluded him for years, namely how to generate consistent cash from his public company that everybody's pensions and everybody's, you know, mutual funds and ETFs are all funding, rather than try to figure out that problem, he decides to have some type of public spat with the commander who was in charge of the rescue operation. And so he got into, here's the article. It says, while world celebrates successful Thai cave rescue, Elon Musk instead has bizarre public spat with hero rescue chief. Oh, I love it. This is on Zero Hedge. This is what the article says. Elon Musk, continuing his recent streak of bizarre behavior, has come out and publicly questioned the authority and expertise of one of the key individuals responsible for successfully navigating the rescue of 12 boys and one soccer coach trapped in a cave in Thailand. If there's been one major world event that has brought people together and dominated news headlines, it has been this rescue. Of course, the ending was feel good for just about everybody except Elon Musk. The Guardian picked up the story on Tuesday and wrote this. Elon Musk has questioned the expertise of Thai rescue officials who turned down his offer of a submarine, despite having organized the successful rescue of all 12 boys and their football coach from a flooded cave. The entrepreneur had offered his help and posted footage of tests being carried out on the apparatus he proposed in recent days. But while Narangsak Astanakorn, the head of the Joint Command Center coordinating the operation, acknowledged Musk's offer, he said that the mini-submarine would not have been practical for the rescue. In response, Musk said that Astanakorn was not the subject matter expert, adding that he believed he had been inaccurately described as rescue chief and should be more accurately referred to as the former Thai provincial governor. So Elon Musk, they didn't use his cave dildo, and now he had a shit fit, and he decided to lash out at the head of the Joint Command Center coordinating the operation, who said that his apparatus that he proposed was not practical for the rescue. So instead of just saying, wow, it's really great that 13 people are safe, Musk decides to give this guy some shit and start telling him he has no fucking idea what he's talking about. Hey, you don't know anything about caves. You know nothing about caves. I'll go sleep on that cave floor for all week if I need to. So that was that, and life goes on, right? That was the story last week. Except on Friday, this beautiful interview with a guy named Vern Unsworth came out. This guy was one of the rescuers who helped pull the rescue together. And he was interviewed by CNN International. And he said, quote, he can stick his submarine where it hurts, unquote. He was asked about what his thoughts on Elon Musk's idea were, and he said it just had absolutely no chance of working. And he called it a PR stunt. So I'm going to play a little clip from the CNN International interview from this guy. And this is, of course, courtesy credit to CNN. Just don't fucking sue me, all right? It's 54 seconds. Give me a break. I got a small podcast that 10 people listen to. So CNN, if you're listening, don't be dicks about this, all right? Here's the interview. They talked to this guy about what his thoughts on Elon Musk's idea for the cave rescue were.
What your thoughts on Elon Musk's idea was?
And stick his submarine where it hurts. Just had absolutely no chance of working. He had no conception of what the cave passage was like. The submarine, I believe, was about 5'6" long, rigid, so it wouldn't have gone round corners or round, you know, round any obstacles. It wouldn't have made the first 50 metres into the cave from the dive start point. Just a PR stunt.
But he went into the cave on Tuesday.
And was asked to leave very quickly.
He went into the cave on Tuesday, yes. And was asked to leave very quickly. Even better is this guy has a Liverpool accent, too. So I got a feeling this guy is my my Liverpudlian brethren. But, yeah. I mean, that pretty much sums it up. He showed up. He had no fucking idea what was going on. His idea wouldn't have made it 50 feet past the dive point in the cave. I mean, can you imagine being one of these divers? You're an expert, right? You've been working on scuba and rescue your whole life. You get called in to do this. You get called into this project, right? You're hearing, oh, this is really serious. There's 12 kids stuck in a cave with their soccer coach. And shit, you're thinking to yourself, well, my 30 years of training are finally going to come in handy. I've been going every year, and I've been taking continuing education courses in scuba, and I've been making sure that I stay up to date on the latest industry trends for search and rescue, and I'm sure some of the people involved were, you know, police scuba divers, and they said that the Thailand Navy SEALs were there also, too. I mean, could you imagine being of that level of expertise? Can you imagine being a fucking Navy SEAL? All right, I was just watching a documentary the other day, watching what these guys go through during their hell week. All right, it is insane. It's insane. I think you're up for 6 days straight or something during hell week, or you sleep an hour a night or whatever, and that's it. You're running basically a marathon every day. You're carrying each other on each other's shoulders. You're being drowned. You're being shot in the face with pepper spray. I mean, it's just, it is absolute insanity. Could you imagine being a Navy SEAL and being on the outside of this cave trying to organize a real rescue operation with people that are familiar with the local geography, they're familiar with the ins and outs of the cave system, they're professional divers, and you turn around and here this fucking guy comes walking along with his team of four engineers from SpaceX, and they're carrying along this big clunky metal thing, and they just show up and they're just like, hey, we've got the solution. And you're like, what do you mean you've got the solution? And they're like, well, we've got the solution. We took a bunch of old parts from SpaceX and we put this thing together, and you stuff a kid in it. And we tested it at the pool at the local YMCA. So everything checks out, right? And you're just looking at him like, are you serious? Are you serious? Right? I mean, think of all the things that need to be considered. Not just what this guy's talking about, the topography of the area, the geography of the caves, all of this stuff, but you can't just roll in when there's a team of 1,000 experts working on this and just say, hey, we got the solution. I mean, the one thing this guy said is it's a 5-foot big, long, rigid object. It wouldn't have made it 50 feet. So he didn't really, when this guy says that Musk really had no idea what this cave was like, he really didn't. He just invented this fucking thing and just decided to fly. I mean, this would be like... This would be like me watching this on the news and then going out to the dumpster in my condo community here and finding a old box that somebody, you know, brought their refrigerator in when they were moving into a house, and me looking at that box and then looking at a roll of duct tape that I have and thinking to myself, yeah, I can fix this Thailand cave problem. I got everything I need right here. Let's see what else is in this dumpster. Oh, okay. Couple of old roofing shingles. An old empty jar of applesauce. A couple of used diapers. Yeah, I can MacGyver something together here with all this stuff. And then I make the call. Hey, guys. I can be in Thailand as soon as 24 hours. I just have to put together the prototype. And then I gotta drive my ass down to the local YMCA. And don't worry, my best friend's going to come with me. We're going to grab a six-pack, and we're going to do some testing on this. Yeah, he's got a snorkel mask, and we'll put some testing together, and I'll put this thing onto a plane, and I'll be there in 18 hours. These guys in Thailand are probably like, yeah, you know, if you make it in 18, that's fine, but, you know, take your time, all right? Don't rush. We wouldn't want anything to happen. And then this guy just shows up. I've got it, guys. Cave dildo. And I love how fucking deadpan this guy is when he's talking about it. Because it, at first, the guy who at first said, look, it was a lovely idea, but it didn't have any purpose. That should have been Elon Musk's cue to be like, well, you know, it was nice that I tried to help out. And I'm really happy everybody's safe. Game over. The end. But instead, he comes out and starts giving this guy shit. Well, that's not technically your title. You know? Okay, Elon. This guy was very deadpan about it. You know? The guy just got on camera for a CNN international interview and just said, it can take his submarine and it can stick it up his ass. Oh, God. You gotta love the British. You really do. This guy doesn't give a fuck. He reminds me of the guy from Millwall that stopped the terrorist attackers. If you don't know, Millwall is, I believe Millwall is like right outside of London. If it's not a town or a neighborhood in London, I think it's southeast London, but I'm not sure off the top of my head. Anyways, Millwall is known as a hyper-religious football town. They have their own club there called Millwall FC. They are massive rivals with West Ham, and which is another London club, and they have a history of hooliganism. They really do. I think they have a couple other rivals. I think like Leeds is another huge rival of theirs. But Millwall is known as their football supporters are known as tough motherfuckers. They are known as just straight up, you know, brutally tough. You hear story. I mean, when I first started learning about soccer and specifically English soccer, I was hearing a story, I believe, about Millwall and West Ham and their long history of serious just beating the living fuck out of each other, from what I understand, the fans. So this guy reminds me of, like, a year ago, there was a Millwall FC supporter who was sitting in a pub, you know, just having a pint and relaxing, and I think probably watching the Millwall match, and a bunch of terrorists, I think three of them, broke in, and they all had knives, and everybody else kind of ran out of the pub, and this guy, like, took a swig out of his pint and actually said to this guy, here it is, a football fan reportedly yelled, fuck you, a Millwall, as he single-handedly took on the three knife-wielding London terror attackers armed with nothing more than his fists. Fuck you, a Millwall. I love it. Roy Larner has already been hailed a hero, with a petition launched for him to be awarded the George Cross Medal for his actions in the Black and Blue Steakhouse on Saturday night. In fighting back, the 47-year-old Millwall fan gave dozens of others who were in the Borough Market restaurant the chance to escape. Now out of the intensive care ward of St. Thomas Hospital, where he was treated for knife wounds all over his body, including his neck, the father of one has told the son how he reacted when the killers burst into the restaurant shouting, Islam, Islam, and this is for Allah. Like an idiot, he told the newspaper, I shouted back at them. I thought I need to take the piss out of these bastards. I took a few I took a few steps towards them and said, fuck you, a Millwall. So they started attacking me. I stood in front of them trying to fight them off. Everyone else ran to the back. I was on my own against all three of them. That's why I got hurt so much. It was just me trying to grab them with my bare hands and hold on. I was swinging. I got stabbed and sliced 8 times. They got me in the head, chest, and both hands. There was blood everywhere. They were saying, Islam, Islam. I said again, fuck you, I'm Millwall. This is what this Vern Unsworth reminds me of. Hey, did you like Elon Musk's cave idea? Fuck you, I'm Millwall. Tell him to stick the thing up his fucking ass. Oh, God. Anyways, so I put a tweet out on this, and it's gotten like 2,200 retweets over the last day or so. And I was just cracking up. I was like, wow, this is huge. There's a lot more people that are from the skeptical side of things, thinking that this is also a PR stunt. Maybe it's not just Tesla shorts or Tesla bears that think that Elon is embarrassing himself a little bit by interjecting himself into these global crises and offering his help where it wasn't really asked for. Recently, he also said he's going to solve the water crisis in Flint, Michigan, which, to his credit, if he does, that would be a fantastic thing. Look, if Elon Musk had saved these kids, I would be doing a very different podcast. I know you get a lot of shit for being critical about him and being critical about Tesla, but the fact of the matter is, if he had come out and he had solved this problem and he had saved these kids, I would be giving him, well, Christ, I would be giving him credit for that. I would, but that's not the case. Instead, you got Vern Unsworth, who probably went home, flipped on the Millwall match, drank about 15 Carlsbergs. I don't give a fuck who Elon Musk is. Never heard of him. good one, Vern. I'll have a pint for you tonight. I couldn't help myself today. I really couldn't. I wasn't going to do a podcast. And like I said, this is not an all Tesla podcast. I had Sam call in yesterday and we did one on IntelSat, this like long hour-long podcast, whatever, but the audio was terrible. So some of you saw that I put it up. And I'm going to have to redo it because it just sounds so bad. And I refuse to put it up there and try to make people listen through an interview where the phone is cracking and people's voice is going in and out and whatever. So it's a huge disaster. But anyways, I had to do a little quickie here on Saturday and come up and just talk about this because this is just hilarious. And if you're a Tesla shareholder, I don't know what you should be thinking about your CEO who seems to be focused on anything aside from running his car company. But the moment of truth is coming up in a couple weeks. We'll have some updated numbers from the company, so we'll get an idea as to how things are going. They're supposedly going to be advancing their efforts into China now, which I think this is probably the third time that they've said that. I think they said it 2 years ago and then 2 years prior to that. Where the funding is going to come from that, I don't know. And also, to my listeners, just so you guys know, have a debate planned for early next week between Montana Skeptic, who is, as many of you know, on the skeptical side of things with Tesla, and Galileo Russell, who is the kid who was asked to ask... Well, he's not a kid. He's in his early 20s, I think, so he's a man. He was the gentleman who was asked to ask a question on Tesla's conference call when Elon famously, quote-unquote, went to YouTube instead of answering the question from an actual sell-side analyst. So he runs Hyperchange TV. And we're going to have a very structured debate. It's going to be three topics, one chosen by Montana Skeptic, one chosen by Galileo Russell, and one chosen by me. The topics have already been chosen. I have emailed them to the debate participants. It's going to be structured. It's going to be timed. It should only be about an hour long. I'm going to try and keep it extremely objective. I'm going to make sure everybody has the exact same amount of time to talk. And hopefully we can further the discussion on how things are going at Tesla. But for today, the only way to further the discussion was to do 29 minutes about the old cave dildo and my new hero, Mr. Vern Unsworth. He actually reminds me of here's a story that has nothing to do with anything, but I'm going to tell you anyways. I was in Italy a couple years ago, and I think this was 2013. I went with my mother and some family friends, and most of the days, we were staying outside of Florence. Most of the days, the group that we were with had an agenda, and they had different things that they were doing. So they would, there was like a charter little like private bus that would take them to different parts of Italy each day of the week. So one day they went to Siena. One day we went to this village called Lucca. One day we went to Banfi Vineyards. One day we went to Montepulciano. There were a bunch of different places and activities that we had planned. But there was one day that I took the day off and said, I'm going to go up into Florence by myself. So I did. And I went up into the city of Florence and was just screwing around, doing nothing. I was doing some shopping and doing a little sightseeing. Had a coffee, had a beer, whatever. And I'm walking around, and there's a Irish pub in Florence called the Florence Pub that I really liked. It was like one of my favorite places there. And is owned by a guy from Kosovo named Benny. So if anybody has ever been there, or you're in Florence, or you know what I'm talking about, I'd like to know if Benny is still there. If he is, give him a shout. Let him know that he's the man. So sitting outside of the Florence pub, there is a bunch of little high top tables. And at the middle of the day, probably around 3 p.m, I wasn't going in for a drink. I was just walking past. There's this guy sitting outside of the pub, and he kind of looks like this guy, Vern Unsworth, in the, if you get to watch the interview, it's on my Twitter. But he looks worse. He is balding, and his teeth are all fucked up, and he looks like he's on his fifth pint. He's got a nice big pint of beer in front of him, and he's smoking a cigarette, and he just looks terrible. He looks like he's just ridden a very hard train. So he's sitting there, and as I'm walking past him, I'm looking at his shirt. He's wearing a blue polo shirt, and it has an Oxford United logo on it. And Oxford United is a little-known football club in England. They play, I think, in like the third tier or the fourth tier. And I just know of them just from following English football, English soccer, for some time now. And I walked up to him, and I said, "Wow, Oxford United." I said, "You don't see a shirt like that all the time." And you have to know, Oxford United isn't a super popular football club in England. I think their stadium holds like 10,000 people, so it's not a big stadium. I think they play in like the third tier English football, or the third or the fourth probably. But regardless, they're a lesser known club, you know. So I say to this guy, "Oh, Oxford United, huh? It's an interesting shirt. You don't see too many of those." And the guy takes a drag off his cigarette. And he looks up at me and he's like, "Mate, wear every fucking wear." So I said, "Okay." So I go back to Florence, or I go back to the villa that night. And we're having like a dinner with everybody. And I'm telling my mother this story. I said, "I see this guy sitting outside the pub. He's wearing an Oxford United shirt. You never really see that, you know, too often. They're a lesser-known club." And I asked him about it, and the guy said, "Wear every fucking wear." And I thought that was just hilarious, because they're not every fucking wear. Trust me. It's not like they're Real Madrid. They don't have a, you know, global support. I'm sure they have great support in Oxford, where they are, and probably a little bit around there, but, you know. So the next day, I find myself back up in Florence, and I'm with my mother this time, and we're walking around sightseeing or whatever, and we wind up walking past the Florence pub and sitting out at the same table with the same shirt on, looking like the same pile of shit he looked like the day before, just looking terrible, drinking a beer, smoking a cigarette, is the same fucking guy. So I said to my mom, I'm like, "Holy shit." I'm like, "That's the same guy. That's the guy with the Oxford United shirt that I was telling you about that looked like shit, that ran over twice yesterday, told me where every fucking wear, blah, 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 blah." And my mom looked at me and she said, "Chris, they're every fucking wear." Oh, and that's what this guy, Vern Unsworth, reminds me of. I know that story kind of a non sequitur, but I don't know. It's one of my favorites. So I wanted to get it down one of these days, and this seemed like a perfect occasion. With that being said, I got shit to do. We'll catch up early next week. Peace!